Corey, if you can put your drink down for 1 second, I want to tell everybody that this episode of Chicago's Bravest Stories is brought to you by Chicagoland 1-800-BOARDUP.
Chicagoland 1-800-BOARDUP. Two questions are likely to be asked in rapid succession when a building is damaged by a storm, flood, or other natural disasters. How bad's the damage, and how can I secure the building?
Well, there's actually three questions. Is the beer cold?
Is the beer cold? And how can we provide this beer to the victim?
How do we keep
with proper assistance? You guys have seen the logo out there. You guys know. I mean, what's everyone's seen this Dalmatian, right?
Wearing the red helmet. Yep. Chicagoland 1-800-BOARDUP.
And the reason you guys have seen that is because they're out there and they're helping us out every day. They spent 10 years supporting the fire department. And again, you guys know their name. You guys have seen their logo. And that's because you know they're doing right by victims out there.
Yep, their victim assistance program, which takes somebody whose house has been damaged by fire or wind or water. They'll take them from the initial damage to the restoration to moving them back into their residence. This is a program that's not just a board up service. Chicagoland 1-800-BOARDUP is more than just a board up company with their victim assistance and over 10 years of supporting the fire service. I think we're back. We're recording. Everything's working. Look at that. So, in preparation for Battle of the Badges 2024, we have Al Ortiz, Captain Al Ortiz. You are the new owner of the Battle of the Badges, correct?
Yeah, correct.
We got to get you closer to the microphone. Yeah.
We created a charity.
Was it always a charity?
Well, we did before in 2002. We came up with a committee of members that were sitting together to make the organization, or rather, to put a show on together raise funds.
Is that better in your headphones? Sorry?
Yeah, no, that's better.
Okay,
I got a little. It's loud.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was asked to come on board, Steve O'Malley and Kenny Corcoran, Kenny Corcoran was a sergeant on the police department. Steve O'Malley was a lieutenant, retired as a lieutenant. At the time, they grew, just like myself, we grew up in a Park District boxing program. So all three of us used to box as, you know, different ages, obviously, they're older than I am. But we grew up in a Park District boxing program, and after September 11th, they thought about raising money for first responders, yeah. Just in case another tragedy like that occurred. So Steve reached out to me and says, hey, me and Kenny were talking, and we wanted to put on a boxing show. He goes, you know, with your background and everything, do you mind putting a team together? And I was like, sure, that's awesome. I was training and managing professional and amateur boxers at the time. So
were you on the job already?
Yeah, I was okay. On the job already. I had just crossed over in 2002. So,
okay.
I was
definitely digging at you. I was taking a look, like, again, very, very light research on this. The Chicago Battle of the Badge has been around for, what, 20-some years or longer?
Well, since 2002, we brought it back. They had something prior to that, because I remember my dad talking about with Chief Lowney. He was a battalion chief or district chief out of 117's quarters.
Okay.
He was a big fight fan and a boxer as well.
Yeah.
They used to box prior to me coming on the job. When my dad was on the job, there was a match between police and fire. I don't know what they called it at the time.
Okay.
But they used to throw that boxing match at Faces on Clark Street.
Yeah.
And a lot of the retired guys remember that.
Okay.
And then there was a lull because You know, we there was no boxing.
Just dropped
no
off.
Fire police, right. Until, you know, 2002, we got together and some members from the Chicago Park District that used to run the boxing program, they were the chair or the committee organizers, and we sat together and we put the show together.
Okay.
And then COVID came.
Right.
And that ended the world, right? So they chose that pandemic to kind of, you know, ride off into the sunset.
Okay.
You know, they were already semi-retired. Steve O'Malley was already retired. Kenny Corcoran was gone. Joe Sarna, Tom Crow, and Jimmy Ray, those guys that were sitting on a committee with us, they were already retired or semi-retired. They were done. You know, it's a lot of work.
I know I went to the one and only one I ever went to was, God, I don't remember when. It was down by De La Salle.
Mm-hmm.
And, it is at De La Salle.
It's still always
is.
Been, right?
Yeah, it still is. Well, one year we were at St. Rita.
Oh, yeah.
And then that was it. Then we went back. We started at De La Salle, went to St. Rita, then...
No, that didn't work.
It didn't work, so we went back to De La Salle. And thanks, you know, thankfully they're hosting us again, the venue, you know, so they're letting us use that again. We're really excited to bring the show back, especially after COVID and everything.
Yeah.
People were showing interest, always asking, hey, we're going to bring it back. So we tried, you know, to sit together with new parties of police, fire, and park district, and we couldn't see eye to eye. So I just thought, hey, you know what? Let's be legit. I'll make a charity. We'll get a non-for-profit 501c3 status, and we'll throw the show. I was already throwing boxing shows in the past, pre-COVID. But Chicago Boxing Promotions was a little group that we came up from the boxing gym that we're out of. There's a plug for Oakley Fight Club.
are they a Southside crew? Where are they out of?
Oakley Fight Club is on Hubbard and Oakley. It's a boxing gym that we trained in. Before, it was a jab gym where the professionals and amateur fighters that I used to manage and coach, that was our hub. So it changed owners. Now it's called Oakley Fight Club. So
let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go back to when you first started getting into it. So like you talked about, you kind of came up in a Park District boxing program. Right. Where was that out of?
Humble Park.
Oh, okay.
Humble Park had a boxing team in the basement. Johnny Hurricane Hurd, may he rest in peace, was a coach. He had over 100.
But he was a professional fighter, right?
Yeah.
I know that name. He was a professional fighter.
They used to call him El Gato Negro in Mexico because he was a national champion in Mexico. They used to take him there to lose, but
oh really?
Yeah, he won the national title in Mexico.
Vince El Gato Negro.
Yeah.
Was not my...
Just so you know.
Oh, I thought that was my college... No, it definitely
way
was that.
No, way too early. Yeah.
It's a translation for him?
Yeah, you're the black cat now, is what you are.
So I started boxing at 7 years old.
Come on.
Seven?
In the basement of my house with my dad, and he'll be here a few weeks prior to the event. And then one day he says, you're ready to go to the gym. You know, to a real gym.
Yeah.
And it probably was a year later.
He had that background too, huh?
Yes, my father fought in the 60s.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so he trained at CYO Gym, which is on Jackson and Racine.
Okay.
CYO was a big thing back then for all the old-timers that know that organization.
Yeah.
It was a great organization and had a great boxing. They were more popular than the Golden Gloves.
Yeah.
You know, they were actually before the Golden Gloves came out. So...
And your father was he on the job at the time that he was boxing and training?
No, my father came on in 1977.
Okay.
All right.
So for the people who don't know, there are three generations of Ortiz on the Chicago Fire Department.
Correct.
You're the middle guy.
Yeah, right. And, and for some reason, it just turned out to be that way.
Yeah.
We're not like George Foreman, where he named all his kids George and all the girls Georgetta. But my father's Alfonso Ortiz. I'm Alfonso R. Ortiz, and my son is Alfonso R. Ortiz Jr. So there's three Alfonsos. And then
Al Ortiz's.
Right. And now my son, my grandson is Al Ortiz.
Is he really?
The third. Yeah.
Oh, man, I didn't know that.
My AJ's son. So.
Huh.
So there's four of us. I don't know why.
Honestly, I know we talked about this before, but I was
running parallels to the Foreman family.
Yeah, right. I was kind of bummed out because I was hoping to get your old man and AJ in too.
Yeah,
But, you know, maybe one of these days down the
line. Yeah, absolutely. Cool, we would love to. My dad would be great. He's a book of knowledge.
Oh, God. Yeah, so you came up in that program,
yeah,
more or
right,
less,
and right.
You were just kind of bouncing around then? Or
yeah, my father, you know, he fought in the Park Districts. He won the CYO tournament like 3 years in a row.
Oh, wow.
And then I, later on, you know, in the 80s, I won the CYO tournament 3 years in a row. So we were like,
Are you right-handed or left-handed?
I'm a right-hand. I'm a right-handed.
You fight right-handed?
Yes, conventional stance, correct.
Well, I saw the feed for when you guys went out, and so New York has the International Battle of the Badges.
Right, that was the first show.
That was their first one?
Yeah, it's a long story, but I got
it. And it was at Madison Square Garden, and we talked earlier that it came out last minute that it was going to be streamed. Why'd they fight last? Because they didn't go in weight order.
No, right. I think...
waiting for CFD to, it's like they were doing it just because I was watching.
Yeah, there you go.
The last fight was CFD, right?
Well, no. We were number 10 out of 13 bouts.
Okay.
So
maybe I just turned it off after.
Yeah, right, right. You probably gave up. You gave up.
I got tired.
Right.
That fight was awesome.
Yeah, you know what happened was that the NYPD, they pulled out on them.
Oh, did
6
they?
Weeks before the show. And that's actually, obviously, that's their thing.
Well, guys always have beef with each other.
I guess. It's just a story I heard from the guy throwing the show.
They had a couple Atlanta PD.
Yeah, so he said.
A bunch of guys from England.
He talked to all the team and, you know, his board because they got a charity. Their boxing gym is a charity, not-for-profit as well. He talked to his board members and he said, hey, can we still pull this off in 6 weeks? NYPD pulled out. He says, let's try it. Let's do it. So they got on the horn, and they started calling everybody up. So they got England there. They got Atlanta, Georgia. Houston came, and they reached out to me. And so I was like, yeah, I got two guys I'll take. And they could only match one guy, so that's why we ended up with Nick. And Nick did a good
show. He did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, he started off a little slow.
I was very surprised on that guy. Were you surprised about that guy's fighting ability?
Yeah, I think... You know, I seen a fight last year.
Did you really?
He lost against FDNY.
Yeah.
So I had a clip, and we had a plan, and I didn't get to work with Nick for a very long time. We just had a few sessions together because he works at another gym. But he was surprisingly strong because they both weighed at 165 pounds.
And he could box.
The opponent was 165.3. So... Oh, wow. You know, they were right there.
Yeah.
You know, but he seemed a lot stronger, you know, and he looked a little bigger too.
Right from the get-go, he comes out and he just hits Nick with a bunch of stiff jabs.
Yeah. Well, I think what happened was like 30 seconds into the fight, Nick started off great. He came out with two solid jabs, you know, getting his timing and his rhythm down. And this guy threw a jab like from his hip and he came across his nose. So and he blew up.
Yeah.
So Nick started bleeding right away. Yeah. And I think that threw his concentration off a little bit.
Yeah.
And he was a little flustered. But he started putting it together, you know, in the second round. And like everybody said, if we had one more round, you know, he looked pretty good at the, you know, going to the body in the third round.
Yeah, that would have been my assessment as somebody who was sitting on a couch watching it from home with no apparent danger to myself. That if Nick would have just came out even faster in the first two rounds, this guy was running out of gas.
Yeah, right, right.
But he was surprisingly good, the guy that Nick fought.
You know, the way he put his arm down
and
he was kind of moving his arm, it threw Nick off the timing. So
Nick did great. Is he going to box in Battle of the Badges?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
So that's going to be a great fight too.
Did you have any concern about taking a guy to a fight? I mean, in boxing – timing, that's relatively short amount of time between matches, wouldn't you think?
What do you mean?
Him boxing in New York and then coming back and boxing April 19th?
Oh, no. In the amateur ranks, especially, when I came up, when I used to fight.
Well, that's like Iron Man stuff.
Well, here's what, now they don't allow this to happen anymore. You know, the USAboxing.org is the governing body of amateur boxing across the country. I used to fight twice a night. You know, that's what they did back then.
Sure, that's what I'm saying. That's old school Iron Man boxing.
Yeah, if you're 160 pounds and there's a lot of people in that weight category, right. Now they're saying, hey, you fight at 6 o'clock. If you win, you're fighting again at night.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So we did that back in my time. But now in the amateurs, like if we were to go to a tournament, I know they don't have the ringside tournament anymore in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
But it used to be we took boxers out there to fight. You fight Monday and you win, you fight Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on how many people are in your weight category.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could fight four times that week, you know.
And it's in your interest. Like, you want to fight all those fights. Like
correct.
So
from, you know, Thursday to another month, you know, it's like I've told a lot of fighters, when I started fighting with my dad, my first fight, we fought every month. So it was like by the time a year came around, you know, I was just a 10 or 11-year-old kid with like 25 fights, you know.
25 fights, CTE.
Yeah, right. Because, you know, every month you fought. So, you know.
So keeping that, I was going to say, keeping that party going, like what was it about it once you start getting into it that kept your interest?
You know, I don't know. Because even my dad said, I don't know why you keep coming back to the gym, but every time I come home from work, you want to go back to the gym.
Yeah.
And, you know, here I am every day.
So he's on the job at that point.
I'm sorry?
He's on the job while this
correct.
Is going on.
Yeah, he came on in 77. So, yeah, he was on the job. And, you know, every day, you know, you're crying, the nose is bleeding, your eyes are watering. You know, the old man's like, hey, you could quit whatever you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And every day I'd be like, no, let's go back to the gym. So,
and that was the world of amateur boxing, right?
Yeah,
now, be like the dark side of amateur boxing back in those days. Was there, if you can talk about it, was there actual, like if you won a belt, was there money to be made in amateur boxing?
No.
It was never. Just
a trophy.
Just the trophy.
Yeah. Or the title.
Yeah.
You know? So, other 16 or so was silver gloves. Golden gloves were over, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, you're going for the trophy or title, you know.
So that was
no money exchange.
It was a pure love of boxing.
Yeah, correct.
Back
and to this day, there's no money involved in amateur boxing for the most part. I mean, you know, that's kind of how I came up. And
was it just you and the family
that boxed?
Yeah,
yes.
Well, of your age, like you don't have eight brothers, right?
No, I have three sisters and myself, so I'm the oldest. So.
Yeah.
What has changed in amateur boxing? Because you've obviously been in the fight game here for a long time, especially in this area.
Yeah.
I know they have concussion protocols now. They have the commission is very strict on certain things right now, like that they didn't have back when you were boxing. What has changed in boxing since you've came on?
Well, I'll give you the positives of it. You know, when I boxed, there was no record of how many fights you had or who you fought. Now there's a system where I can go look up Vince and say, oh, he has 30 fights or 15 fights as an amateur. So you can't pull the wool over somebody's eyes anymore and say, oh, yeah, he's only got two or three bouts. You know, we'll put him against this guy.
And that's nationwide?
Yeah, because that's USABoxing.org.
Right.
We don't use that organization with the Battle of the Badges because we're just first responders and volunteering to fight each other. But if you're talking about the governing body, that's the body that does it.
Okay.
Now,
I mean, even headgear. Like, there was never a headgear.
No, so if you really want to go farther back, when my father fought in the 60s in the amateurs, they wore no headgear and they had no shirts on. So it looked like a professional fight for them.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, they made us wear a shirt and then head protection now. So in the amateur.
What value does having a shirt add to amateur boxing?
I don't know. That's why the pros, you don't wear a shirt in the pros. But I think it's just like, you know, like you'll see college basketball. You know, tuck your shirt in.
Yeah.
And, you know,
just the modesty aspect of it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. You don't really see too many knockouts, you know, in amateur boxing at this level.
Yeah.
But
they do happen.
Saw one.
Yeah.
You know, I got Aaron's belt hanging up at our gym.
Yeah, that's it. That was, you know, and at the Battle of the Badges, historically, we've had some stoppages, you know.
Yeah.
But I think
you don't see it that often.
Right. Well, that's the job of the referee, and that's where the eight count comes in.
So it's a mandatory standing eight count in amateur boxing.
Correct.
Okay. So every time you get knocked down, you gotta respond to the eight
count. Or if he sees that you're not defending yourself, he'll stop. And he's giving you 8 seconds to recover. And they usually ask you if you want to continue. The eight count is like a point. And a point is just like a jab to the face. So it's not a big deal. But it does look on the crowd and on the judges like, you know, you're taking... It's saving you from a knockout, really, that eight count. So he starts counting. One, two, three, you know, give you an eight. He's stopping the action, where in the pros, they won't.
Yeah.
You're hurt, he'll continue to...
I would say amateur-wise, like the refs are really... They're driving these matches for the most part, wouldn't you say? Or so at least than...
Absolutely. That's the job of the referee in the amateur level, just like it is in the pros. But in the pros, they let it go a little longer. With the amateurs, you know, the kids and the concussion protocols and so forth, they want to, you know, get in and stop that stuff. So,
welcome back to the next episode of Will Joey Matthews Answer Josh Hill's Phone Call?
Here we go. Take two. I'm calling... my boss, the leader of the Frontline Mortgage team, Joey Matthews.
Hey, you've reached Joey Matthews. Sorry I missed your call, but if you can leave me a brief message, including your name and your preferred contact number, I will be sure to get right back to you. Have an amazing day.
That was part two of Will Joey Matthews Answer Josh Hill's Phone Call here on Chicago's Bravest Stories?
He has not. He probably thinks I got some kind of drama with a loan file or something. But anyways, he's the leader of the frontline team. Many people, if you ask around, have worked with him. The guy is as solid as they come. Sets a high standard for the team. So if he answered the phone, we could ask him about that. But actually, I'm leaving a message right now, and he's my boss, so I'm not going to do that. All right, boss, we'll talk to you later. Thank you.
That episode of Will Joey Answer brought to you by the Frontline Mortgage Team. Well, in New York, they had the super. Was it the super heavyweight that they stopped? They had a stoppage.
They were, you know, I didn't see the whole show because I was working with Nick.
They had a stoppage, and I don't know if it was one guy got rocked or it was his arm.
One guy dislocated his elbow.
That's probably what it was because he was.
It was right in the first round or something.
Yeah,
I seen it pop out.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, and I guess the doctor
that was the stoppage. Yeah,
yeah, the physician ringside, he couldn't snap it back in or pop it back in. Yeah. So,
and even if he could, like,
yeah, do you want to fight's go? Over?
Yeah, the fight's over.
Right.
I'll go to the hospital. Thanks.
Yeah.
Did
there's a fine line between pleasure and pain when it comes to boxing. You know?
Right. Right. Where'd your guys' refs come from? Are they all like part of the organization too?
For New York or for Chicago?
No, for Chicago.
So the Chicago refs that we're using, the officials, they're all former USA boxing officials.
Oh, okay.
So they have the background, the judging skills, the timekeeping, and the reffing. So. So we use legit guys. We always have.
Yeah.
That works out well. That's the best way to do it. I know a lot of people ask, who are the judges? You know, like, you're just going to put some.
Yeah, it's not Bobby from Truck 27 or something like that.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah.
He's been waiting to fuck with this guy for 10 years. Right. He's finally
I got there. It now.
Yeah.
Right. Everything's on the square. I really enjoy... at Battle of the Badges, the pageantry we do, the traditions, and the bagpipes go off. We do the anthem. It's just a great atmosphere there. It's super cool. The only thing is we got to get that beer line going faster, you know?
You know, the first year we were there, we ran out of beer. If anybody that was there in 2002, they remember. They did not bring enough beer. We've never had that issue again. We make sure we have plenty.
Yeah. Well, now you got the trailers with the beer, and
now there's a truck parked outside. You know. So, but
there's nothing better. Like, what's better than going watching a boxing match, having a beer, and hanging with your guys? You know?
Right.
That is why you go to these matches.
You know, all the years of, going into committee meetings and the training and all the time that's put into putting the show on. A few times I was like, man, I'm done with this, you know?
Yeah.
And
just the amount of work.
The work, yeah. And then one, you know, we're marching up to the ring, you know, with the bagpipes. And my dad goes, "You can't walk away from this thing, man. This is awesome. You know, can't you can feel
just for that one moment there.
Goosebumps.
Yeah. Because you're working on this thing year round.
Yeah.
To come back to April 19th.
Yeah, correct.
Is it gonna be April 19th pretty much?
Well, we normally used to have most of the fights were in April, so that's why we kind of stuck with it. We tried something. The old committee tried something like in September or something like that, and it didn't work out. It didn't feel right, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So they moved it back to April, and it's been working well. And the good thing about it is that normally the Golden Gloves are around that same time, so the boxers are kind of, you know, right after the holidays, Thanksgiving, they're kind of gearing up for the tournament, and then our tournament's right afterwards. So, you know, it just falls right into place. Yes, so it's a good time.
You're getting guys at their peaks, you know.
Right.
Optimally.
Right. But, so.
And are these guys all city firemen and city cops?
Yeah, they're okay. And we've had some calls from, you know, other departments,
sure,
and other police officer departments at the state, suburbs guys. And I'm like, we haven't opened that up yet. And that's something we want to, you know, we've been talking
about.
That's
in the future, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, once you get there, once you're ready to handle it.
Right, maybe. Right.
Now, here's something I've always wanted to know. To avoid bringing in a ringer, what are the qualifications for, does he have to be a member of Chicago Fire Department?
Yeah.
Okay, and like from what period of time he has to have been on within a certain period of time?
Well,
what's the criteria?
We're doing right now active duty.
Okay.
You know,
so he could be a candidate.
Well, there was a time where we use a candidate and then the department.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Said not to.
Yeah.
We can't.
Because he's got to get through his probationary period. Correct. You don't want to get him hurt.
You don't want to get him hurt. Yeah. Right. So, we don't mess with those. And I think the police department is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
They're not using anybody that's in the academy at the present time, but we use active members only. And it's always been Chicago Fire versus Chicago Police Department.
Is every match is one and one, right?
Correct.
There's no firemen fighting firemen.
No, just it's us versus them. So, you know, we work together on the street. You know, we watch each other's back out there, and this is just a friendly competition.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it comes a little bit with some bragging rights. You know,
of course.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, but the bottom line is that we're raising funds for our members, theirs and ours. And, you know, last year, 2023, was a tragic year for both departments. You know, we lost four members and they lost two members. So, I mean, that's just why that's just a big thing, big reason why we're doing this and raising the funds for it.
Right. You know, so. I mean, it's going to happen no matter what, but that kind of. Right.
We're an inherently dangerous job. Correct.
Yeah.
But obviously, no one wants anyone to lose their life on it. And
do you have a specific charity that you're raising? Is there specific ones that you want to promote right now?
Right. So along with what we have done always since 2002 was we raise funds for both police charities and fire charities. And we've split the money basically down the middle. And the police side have always chose Police Memorial Foundation to support. Okay. And then we've gone a little bit. We've supported several. So Ignite the Spirit is ours, is our charity. And they help out tons of families and people. So does the Gold Badge Society, the Widows and Children's Fund, and, of course, the CFT Ministries.
Those are your main ones?
Those are our main ones.
That's a solid group right there.
That's a solid group. And now we're adding our charity to it.
Yeah.
So Chicago Battle of the Badges Charities is we just want to be another charity as well for not just for fire, but for fire and police.
Okay.
To help both.
I think and with the turnout and everything like that, I think you guys do a great job, and I think that you can actually support these charities really well. I think the biggest announcement that you have is that members of Chicago's Bravest Stories are going to be ringside doing some promoting.
Correct.
Some commentary. So I don't know if Corey has been doing this, but I have been working on my ringside commentary.
Hey, listen, people have gotten to know me as an idiot. I don't want to change that. I want to go in uninhibited.
You haven't even been practicing? It's official. We are sitting there ringside, and we're going to be... Yeah, we're happening.
All right, dude.
I'll be sitting right next to you. So
you got to bring your game.
Yeah, no, dude, I'm in.
I want to be there. I want to be like, stiff left jab from the champ.
Yeah.
Boom, shakalaka.
Oh, God. like an NBA jam and a color
yeah,
commentator.
Yeah, stiff left jab. Great Caesar's ghost.
It's going to be a great time. I'm always excited to go there no matter what. But, yeah. That would just be.
Right. Now you got skin in the game.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Everybody so, will
you know, go. You don't got to do it against these people.
I've never heard of anybody going to the Battle of the Badges event and saying they had a bad time. Oh, everybody's always talking about it. They have a great time. And you know how it is on this job that when you come on the job, whatever, 20 years ago, you might never see any of your classmates.
Well,
because they're on a different platoon or different side of the city. Right. And all of a sudden they come there and it's like there's all this camaraderie going on, you know? So it's awesome.
There are two events that you will see people that you haven't seen in years. Battle of the Badges is one. Stash Bash is the other one.
Yeah, it's another one.
Those are our two big, you know, events where you're going to be like, man, I thought I missed your retirement party.
Yeah, right.
And always, both are a great time. Stash Bash is a little... You're gonna get tore up there.
Yeah,
it's a little different atmosphere, but Battle of the Bet, you're hugging everybody because you haven't seen certain people in forever.
Yeah.
But you'll see them at Battle of the Bet.
Right. Yeah. How many people does this does De La Salle hold?
We push 3,000 people in this place.
Yeah,
it's shoulder to shoulder in there, without a doubt.
I believe.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
So I mean, we're super excited. People have been so receptive when I started running with this thing, and we've gotten some sponsors that are really.
I was taking a look. We got.
Tell us who your sponsors are. Give them a shout out.
SGA Youth and Family Services. Phenomenal people. They have a new division. If I may say, that is a suicide prevention for first responders, and so they're really excited to be helping us, and we'd love to have them as a part of us supporting. They're working with first responders to help us in our mental health. So
we've talked about great lengths on here, mental health, and like at one point, very, very undervalued service. And
absolutely,
you know,
most people, you know, just think about. You know, the injuries you have or, you know, line of duty stuff that happens.
Physical injuries.
But nobody knows the scars that you take home with you, you know, and they're there to help. So,
We've been trying to shed a more light on that subject. We've had Greg Bagdad in here.
Yeah, great guy too.
You know, he talked about it. I know for a fact that he's personally helped tons of people on our job. I've sent him some people who reach out to me and just, he's doing his part.
Yeah.
And if any help that we can get your guys from this charity is welcome, and we should have more of them.
Absolutely.
Who else you got in the?
So, you know, Chicago Water and Fire Restoration, they're a group that is supporting a lot of fire departments and police departments across the Midwest, especially during COVID. They also helped a lot with disinfectants and, you know, that kind of thing. So, we can't thank them enough for their support. And also Dignity Memorial is a funeral services that they provide for our line of duty deaths and
families. I saw that. Families. What's their background with you guys? So they've worked a lot with first responders.
Sure, with especially that last year.
In a line of duty, they'll do the body, they'll transport the body.
Right,
and
a lot of the funeral services that we have for our members are run by Dignity Memorial.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So they really help the families out, and they they worked closely with the police department, the fire department, to facilitate that and make that transition or that issue a little bit more comfortable for the families. That's cool. We can't thank them enough as well. So those are our three main sponsors.
Okay.
And of course, we have a variety of other sponsors. We have 14 bout sponsors. The Fire Department Foundation as well, run by Ray Orozco, great help. They're a great organization as well, and they're supporting us.
So each individual card then has their own sponsorship?
Yeah, so we sold our sponsorships, from business cards all the way up to title sponsors. So the three title sponsors are SGA Youth and Family Services, CWF Restoration, and Dignity Memorial.
Yeah.
And then the next step down was bouts. So we have bout sponsors. So during the bout, they sponsor an actual bout. They'll give the trophies out to the competitors,
okay.
You know, inside the ring.
That's where we come in.
That's where you guys come in.
Yeah.
Correct.
We're going to be doing that promotion. So
right.
That'll be great.
That'll be great. And again, like just so everyone knows, hopefully, like this will be coming out just at the right time for this. But you know, guys, don't be scared to hop on the website too, because it looks like you guys are still accepting smaller donations.
Yeah, sure. Right? We are. So April the 1st, if anybody wants, you know, their business logo or artwork, or even Firehouse for that matter, you know, like your Firehouse wants to donate a page or half a page and put it on there. We're doing business cards, half pages, full pages, and gold pages at this time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and so you hop on the website. Website, just so everyone, the first time we'll say it's a website. It's ChicagoBattleOfTheBadges.org. And again, you just go in there under event sponsorships, and you can figure out how to donate if you guys do want to add into the pot as well.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So now that we've tempted everybody with Battle of the Badges, let's get back to your career. So, what year did you come on?
95. Yeah, March 16th of 95. So I just had an anniversary.
And wasn't there was a big test in 95, right?
Also, that was a little later on in that year, like maybe June or something.
Yeah,
or I April. Think,
We've had guys come out and talk about that test, like going to United Center.
Yeah, and looking up at the big screen.
Yeah, and they had a guy in a lab coat.
Yeah,
like,
correct.
You know, if this guy goes this way, what's this guy going to do?
Right, right.
Stuff like that. So... But you got on, was there any, like it is today, was there any EMS at that time when you came on?
Yeah, so I came on as a medic. And
I keep forgetting.
Yeah, I came on as a medic.
I keep forgetting that.
I was, I did some time on, most of my time was on Ambulance 3. I did go to Ambulance 45 out of the academy and spent some time in those wonderful project buildings that were around the United Center.
Yeah.
And then... Then I took the promotion and I went to Ambulance 3 for the most part. I did do some time
took the promotion as PIC?
PIC at the time.
Okay.
And when we first
Why am I finding this out right now, Al?
I don't know.
I've worked with you for a while now. I've taken hundreds of runs with you.
Yeah, right, right.
And this is the first time I find out that you're a PIC?
Yeah, right. So when I came on, they were called paramedic officers. But then later they changed up to PICs.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I did, I think about 7.5 years, and then I crossed over in 2002.
Was that your ultimate goal?
No, I you know, here, this is a funny thing, because a lot of guys ask me that. I thought I'd never cross over. I thought I'd be, you know, I was going to be on the ambulance for my career. The guys I first crossed over due to the arbitrator's ruling, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was 97. The first group of paramedics that crossed over, they had 20 years on the job, you know?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they were already, they were very senior on at their jobs, you know?
So you thought it was going to be harder to get in?
Yeah, I go by the time I cross over, forget it. Right. But that opened up the door for cross training across the board. And now I believe some of these guys, they only do like 2 years, you know, and they cross over.
Yeah, that's not I've definitely heard that story before. So
let's talk about, like, how many years did your son do on the ambulance before he crossed over?
Yeah, well, now that you brought that up, I think he did a year or a year and a half. Yeah,
he was,
because he got called off the civilian list or something. So he got lucky.
Yeah.
So what made you? I mean, obviously your old man was on the job.
Yeah.
But what kind of drove you in that direction? Did you kind of feel like that was the direction you were going to go from a young age?
Not really.
No.
I thought I was going to be a professional boxer.
Yeah. You were just all in on boxing.
Yeah, I was all in. I was a professional athlete for many years. So,
yeah.
And I thought that was going to be my thing. But
did you grow up in Humboldt or no?
Yeah, we grew up in Humboldt Park, and then I had hand issues. So
from the boxing, or
before? From the boxing. So before, you know, as an amateur, I had some hand injuries and my right hand, and then as a pro, it didn't get any better because the gloves got smaller.
Right.
You know, you're fighting with 10-ounce gloves.
What are they now? For Battle of the Badges.
Oh, no, we're using like 16s.
16s, yeah.
Right, so. The pros, you know, they after a certain weight, they go down to 8-ounce gloves, you know, the lighter weights, and then there's 10s, and then like the heavyweights might use 12.
Did you go, what schools were over there? You went to Comente probably?
No,
for high school,
I wasn't allowed to.
Oh, no?
No?
Yeah, no, my dad says any other school but that one.
Come on.
You know, I went to Catholic school,
okay.
St. Boniface, across the street from Eckerd Park. It's no longer exists. But from there, some of the classmates, they They went to Quigley North. Some went to Gordon Tech, Holy Trinity, and Quigley North. So I or Cathedral, I chose to go to Quigley North. It was college prep, seminary. Yeah. Had a test in. I think I liked the fact that you had to wear a shirt and a tie. So I always liked dressing up. So,
yeah.
So I went there and went to Niles College.
Okay.
For a couple of years as well, and then I fell in love and got married. So.
Oh.
We've been together ever since.
How'd you guys meet?
At a Pan American Fest, which is now called, I think it's called like Fiesta Sol or something like that. It's a Hispanic thing.
Yeah.
A bunch of bands out there. It was at Navy Pier, so, or Olive Park or whatever, right outside the pier there.
How come you never put in for 57? It would seem like the natural progression for you, right?
Yeah, I know. I get that question a lot.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. I do. I get
it's almost it's on the verge of almost being like
it's right.
Racist almost.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
You know, because 57 is traditionally a very
it's in Humboldt Park. Yeah. You know, they got the Puerto Rican flags. Yeah. And all. I mean, I've thought of it.
I'm sure it's a shirt you have.
Yeah.
Probably right.
Right. Well, I mean, oh, no, absolutely. It's a and I wear it proudly, without a doubt. But I was at Engine 43. Because I was on Ambulance 3,
yeah.
I just so happened to go back there on the engine. And then I was content there until some details, guys from 44 Truck 36 come over and said, hey, somebody got promoted to engineer. We got a spot open. Why don't you come in? So I went there, and we had a great crew, you know, and we had a lot of fun.
You had a great crew when you went there as a firefighter?
Yeah, as a firefighter, probably.
And that was the heyday, huh?
Yeah, probably.
Was it at the old house or where you are now?
No, where we are now. Okay. The house was built in 81.
And where's that?
412 North Kedzie.
North Kedzie.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
There's activity over there.
Yeah, it was a lot busier, obviously, back then. But so when I got made captain, one of the guys that was there with us, one of the few that are left, he just retired in November, Billy Rotunde. Yeah, he gave me a call and says, hey, the captain's spot open. You're going to put in for it, right? I'm like, all right, there's where I didn't go for 57.
Oh.
So I went back to 44. So
Bill's a great guy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Good and guy. Then good truck guy. Like we talked to about like Paul Keller.
Yeah.
Who I thought it
he's back now.
Is he back?
Yeah,
because like he talked about I was talking to him and he spent his whole career at I was like, you haven't gone anywhere.
No.
He's like, no. So he got promoted and
he went from the engine to the truck. Leave. He went from the engine to the truck and then he got promoted. He had to leave. But he just got back there in our last order. This order, they just closed.
He just can't stay away.
Yeah. Great house. Great house. So
back when you were on the ambulance, any calls you can remember? Anything? I mean, it sounds like you probably had a blast there because you were hanging out.
Who was your partner?
Yeah. Eddie Rivera.
Eddie Rivera.
The guy with the rock sideburns back in the day.
Oh, okay.
I think he's up at Cumberland now.
We
came
on
the
job
together as well.
He's got that time for ambulance.
Oh, no
too.
Kidding. Yeah. So you guys were hanging out.
Yeah, we were classmates, it was a lot of fun. But
and then when
it was different, you know, from what's going on.
Who'd
now.
You have when you first came on though? Who was your officer?
Elsbeth Miller.
Oh, so we've talked in great length about her, because she was the first female,
right.
To come on.
Right.
And she's in a book we had a guy in here who wrote a book and she has a whole couple pages dedicated to her. Yeah, and
she was, what did they call her back then? They called them trauma mamas. She was her and Mercedes Mora. They were the trauma mamas at Ambulance 3.
Well, they wound up being partners.
Yeah. They were partners
eventually,
there.
But
I think right out of the academy, they sent me there, for a couple months or 30 days or whatever, 60 days before then I got assigned to 45. And I remember working with her. She knew my dad because my dad was in the truck 28
around for a while,
in 1977 when he came on. So same battalion. And,
I
remember I used to have
keep your own interest.
Yeah, I remember when the computers first came out, Vince. You know, you could find someone's location. So once I figured that out.
Oh, on the MDT.
Yeah, right. When that first came out, because I mean, we didn't have MDTs when we first came on, but when those came out. I remember having a candidate with me. I won't say his name. We're pulling out of Norwegian, and I'm like, "Hey, go in there and get a dozen of eggs." He's like, "What? Just go get a dozen eggs." Runs in there, gets a dozen eggs. I pull up ambulance 52. Oh, I could hear him on the radio. They're down the street. Who would have, you know, getting a refusal? I could hear him talking to St. Mary's. I'm like, all right, let's go. We're going to go drive over there. You take these six eggs. You go on that side of the street. I take these six eggs on this side of the street. When they come by, let them have it.
Yeah, this is the pinch point right here.
Summer day, you know what I mean?
Oh, God.
Hot summer day, all inside the car, all inside the cab. You know, nowadays with the Ring doorbells and all that, it'd be all over. We'd be all over the news. You know?
I know. I say it all the time now. I'm like, dude, like you can't even like walk down the street without somebody, the possibility that something could get out.
Right,
there.
Right.
Well, now you get in trouble. That's aggression, provocation, and all the other things that will get you fired.
Sure. Yeah. Can't do that anymore. But it was a lot of fun.
It was different, and I'm sure that you've seen how much this department has changed since you've come on.
Well, as far as like the EMS side, you know, a lot of guys don't realize the candidates that come on now, even on the fire side, they're taught, you know, EMT and what they're supposed to do and that kind of thing. And that's great. But when I came on, there was a big division between EMS and fire suppression. You know, that goes beyond me, you know, the years before me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Where these guys would be in a fist fight in the parking lot, you know what I mean? Paramedics and firemen, just over nonsense too, you know. But we went on every run by ourselves. We never had a fire company, you know. So you had to deal it all by yourself. And then
what runs did you get a company with?
None.
Not a cardiac arrest. No. You didn't even get a company.
It wasn't. You know, we
nothing was automatic. Right?
Nothing was automatic. Obviously, the department learns as we go due to tragedies, you know. Like
this is like the late 90s still?
The mid 90s.
Okay.
Right? That's when I came on, 95. But you know, like they didn't have fire companies that went onto the highway with the ambulance.
Oh, right.
So you remember Curtis Hudson?
Yeah.
Mike McInnes.
He got fucked up.
They got fucked up. You know, and they were I think the patient died. You know, they were picking a patient up. That's when we had to squat all the way down and get the stretcher.
Yeah.
And he was putting the stretcher in, and here comes the drunk guy. You know,
slams
into right him. Into him. And I mean, they got injuries that they're still dealing with to this day. I know. So then all of a sudden after that, fire trucks would come with us on the highway to block.
And now we have that's another operating procedure.
Right. Yeah. And that became an SOP. But there was nothing automatic. So when I needed to call for a company to come help us move somebody, you know, like a big person off the second, third floor, we'd get our ass chewed by the company officer or the truck or the engine company that came. Like, well, you can't do your fucking job. Your fucking job. Like, hey, you know, she's 350 pounds. You got to give me a hand here.
Right.
You know what I mean? We can't get her down. Yeah. Now it's unheard of. You know, everybody comes out. Everybody grabs a corner. We move the patient down. And it's for the better, of course.
And now you're automatically dispatched to certain runs.
Yeah.
ALS runs within a certain amount of distance away.
Yeah, 15, 16 blocks or something like that, or 15 minutes away.
This episode of Chicago's Bravest Stories is brought to you by Sports and Ortho. If you're a city employee and you get hurt, you have the option to request Sports and Ortho when you're being assigned some physical therapy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We can always choose us. We're on the city plan, so if you want to come to us, we are happy to see you.
Yeah, you're not locked into whoever they send you to. You can always make a request to go to a better facility if you'd like. And Sports and Ortho is a good alternative.
We think so.
Certain distance away for an ALS run versus certain distance away for a BLS run, you guys are going. Where you're at right now, you guys do a shit ton of EMS.
And well,
you have an ALS truck.
We
do. You got a BLS engine and an ambulance and a field chief.
Yeah. Well. So, we have the deputy at our house. So
Field Division North is at our house.
So.
Yeah, I'm sorry, not field chief.
Yeah,
ADCP.
ADCP, right.
Yeah.
So, it's just, I mean, not only that, but what we're doing a lot lately is civilian assist.
Oh, yeah.
That's just
a big hot tub.
You guys were doing a lot of that right before I left.
It's just one
woman.
And I think that the stats that came out, and I don't have it in front of me, but I recall something like 45,000 civilian assists a year. It's funny, a couple of years ago, I went to an assessment center for the Tulsa, Oklahoma Fire Department, a lieutenant's exam. So I sat in on their orals. And, of course, we talk shop, you know, afterwards. There's 10 other departments, there, or 9 other departments there. I'm like, what do you guys do for civilian assist? What do you guys do for, he goes, a guy from LA says the first two are free. After that, we charge everybody.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, really? I wish we could do that.
I was going to say, like, and
I think Florida was the same way. I think it was Miami-Dade said they do one, and then they start charging.
Well, let me ask you this. The civilian assist that you go to, do you think that, like, are you the only alternative that these people have?
Well, see here, that's the thing. The most frustrating thing, especially for the men, you know, because they're doing the work, is that you have four able-bodied men or three able-bodied men in the house that they won't lift a chair. You know, they could have easily took her down.
They're taking advantage of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes we show up, they're sitting on the porch, and they won't even get out of the way for us to take their loved one down the stairs to the medevac. I mean, to the medevan.
Yeah.
Or the medicar.
I'm getting anxiety right now.
Just those things are frustrating, you know, especially the guys. I got to try to keep them, like, don't say nothing stupid, get us in trouble. Just do it and let's move on.
Because you're going to see him again.
Yeah.
Because there are some places that you're going where you're taking the patient to the car and then they're doing what they're doing and now you got to take them
back
up.
Yeah. So every down.
Well, must go down.
Has an up, right? Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes we'll do.
But there's
10
a lot of that.
Day are just lifting people.
Yeah, there just seems to be like
there are five people.
More people who utilize civilian assist have been moving into that still district for whatever reason.
Yeah, I guess. Barely
they
so.
Love the customer service.
Yeah, right. That's what it is.
You guys are the word is out.
Yeah,
you guys are doing a good job.
I hear that the ERs are telling them just call 911.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, they'll get you up and out.
I was actually just gonna say, like, the ironic part is like civilian assist or civilian assist, but like,
what do you guys do by you?
We do them and we don't charge
and we don't
it, with like, a smile on your face. Wow.
And you know, some
as much of a smile as I
have. Don't get me wrong. Some people need. I mean, obviously. They all need to help. It's just when for the ones that are coming home at 11 o'clock at night from the casino.
I was just gonna say they smell like booze.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, bring
it home. And it says returning from the doctor. Yeah, you know, that's not happening. You know, at 11 o'clock at night. And then
it's beating the system.
When those people are sitting around, like, you know, three young men sitting in the couch. With next to the wheelchair where they're at, it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah, it's tough. That's a tough pill to swallow.
And not to say that anybody's got it better or worse, but like, or, you know, for a department like mine, we've got, you know, the potential of an ambulance on a lift assist or something like that, and then we'll have a difficulty breathing come in, and now we have to get a mutual aid ambulance to come in for an actual EMS call.
An emergency.
You know, and...
Well, speaking of emergencies, you cross over. Let's just jump ahead here.
Yeah.
Because I want to find out, where did you go when you crossed over? When you finally became a fireman, they assigned you. Where'd you go?
I went back to Engine 43.
Oh, did you? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I went on
as a fireman.
On a third shift, yeah.
Now, in that neighborhood, how long was it before you got your first fire?
Not very long. I remember. It was on Armitage. Right off Armitage, California. I mean, I would say probably.
So you were the first engine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was right down the street. So I would say, probably within the first month.
And you were the brand new candidate.
Yeah.
Did they give you the pipe?
Well, I believe I was on the pipe for the first, you know, because you know, they want to make sure that you can handle it. You know what I mean? So, I had Captain Sean O'Driscoll. He was a captain at the time.
Was it a Rager or was it?
I was gonna say, what kind of house was it?
Was it going?
You know what it was? It was a couch in the living room.
Okay.
That for smoking.
Yeah.
And you know, she was drunk. It started going. So the whole room was going by the time we got there.
In this area.
You know, and she's standing with soot in her face in her nose, standing on the front porch. I got it. It's okay. They'll come in here.
Just smoke coming out through the front window. Was it like a three flat or a house?
It's like a 1.5 story frame.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, I think he's even knocked down now. Now it's a townhouse or whatever.
Yeah, right.
You know. But
so no pump can. You this was
no
come,
yeah the,
come right off
the couch. The floor was on fire. The carpet was going.
It was going.
Curtains were going.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of cool because you know as you're standing on the sidewalk, you're looking into the unit. And you could see what's on fire.
It's right,
all right. I didn't even have to go find it. Yeah. Right. It's right there.
The curtains are going, and you're like, "Oh my God!" The whole building's. Right. We got a rager, fellas.
The funniest thing was that the battalion chief tried to remove the lady off the front steps, and they came tumbling down the stairs.
Oh. You know?
I said, "Good takedown, chief." But yeah, I mean, it wasn't long.
That was your first one, huh?
Yeah, and when I was on the ambulance there, 43 was real busy. Yeah. Too. They were catching a lot of fires at the time. And now, of course, gentrification.
Yeah.
You drive by 43 now. It's like, holy cow. I mean, there's building everywhere.
Now everything's sprinklered.
Milwaukee,
you got fire prevention. You got a different neighborhood.
Yeah, like, different construction.
People aren't heating their units with the stoves, and they're not using those old, you know,
space heaters.
Yeah. They actually have central heating and air conditioning.
I noticed what a lot of them are doing, too, is like, so I grew up in like a gray stone, and it was fucking huge. It was like, it was, you know, whatever.
Did you grow up in a city or
something? I did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, over, I was actually over by like Rogers Park.
Oh, okay.
And so we were like on the second floor, but like the unit was huge. It was 3 foot.
Yeah.
It was huge. And
probably long too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and like I think we each had a bedroom too, but like, you look at them now, and I hear a big thing that they're doing is they're buying them, and then they're just ripping out every single floor, and now you got, like, a mansion.
Yeah.
And so, like, just people just buy, and again, they got the whole thing. They put in, you know.
Yeah.
They're fucking beautiful.
Right.
Make a single-family home out of a two-flat or a three-flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful, though. That's what I love about the neighborhood that you're in. Is you have those beautiful gray stones. You got the architecture.
On the boulevards.
Yeah, those were
Franklin
like
Boulevard,
beautiful.
Sacramento, it's something else.
Yeah. See?
Beautiful. And like you.
And luckily they haven't touched it. Looks like not much has happened with
them. You can't. Nobody makes houses like that anymore. You don't have that, you know, that construction. You don't see that anymore. And when you go to like the Steel District that Al works in, it's blocks and blocks of these beautiful gray stones, and you look at this architecture and you're like blown away by it. And now they make these cookie cutter condos and everything like that, and it's like, man, look how beautiful these things are.
I know, and they're all like frame buildings.
Yeah.
Just like
now, you know, that being said, when you guys go to fires in these gray stones, that's got to be a tough fire compared to, you know, your standard, you know, ordinary or something like that, right? Like,
well,
those things are like, you know, brick ovens.
Yeah, right. I think the worst thing is when they cut them up, you know.
Yeah.
So you're thinking in your head.
You're expecting one thing. And
you're thinking, oh, this is a...
Walk in the front
this
door.
This is a regular...
You've got the French room.
Yeah, right.
And you've got the dining room. And then,
and then you know, they might have cut it up and they're renting rooms, you know, and that still happens kind of in that neighborhood where you go, even on EMS calls when you've been there, you'll see a lock, you know, a hasp with a lock on a bedroom door.
Dude, and another one... The old lock on the bedroom door, that's a telltale sign.
Yeah, they're renting the rooms out in the house, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes they add, and they partition something off. And what you think is a typical graystone that we're walking into, all of a sudden you're banging in a, you're like, there should be a wall here. You
right.
know, that kind of thing. Those are the ones that become dangerous.
Yeah.
See, I feel like there have been a couple of those where I'm like, where in the fuck, like how do these people get out? And their front door is the back door.
Right, right.
That's
right.
Where it is. And like, it's. So, so you more or less like you've crossed over on the fire side,
yeah.
And bring it back to your boxing career.
Yeah.
Are you still kind of amateur boxing throughout this time while you're, you know, in the early days of you still being on the fire department?
Oh, so
did you kind of taking breaks?
No, so when I came on the job in '95, I was already a professional fighter.
Oh wow!
I turned pro, I think, 1993.
Now, how do you turn pro? You have to get a card, right?
You get a pro card? Yeah, you got to pay for the license and the Office of Professional Regulation, I think it is, or the OPS.
Yeah.
The Illinois Boxing Commission, you know, they're at the Daly Center.
Do you have to go to a screener, or is this just you have to pay? You have to have a certain amount of fights or anything like
that? Yeah, well, you know, the other thing about it, at least in my time, was that they seen me coming up in the amateur ranks. They seen you win the Park District. They seen you in the Golden Glove tournaments.
Sure.
You know, because they also work.
And this is the Boxing Commission.
The professional regulation for boxing, right? Professional boxing. The
so
state
they
of
know,
Illinois.
They know of you.
They know of you. They've seen some of them work part time in the amateurs as well, like maybe judge or right. Sit ringside, and so they've seen me growing up since I was 7, 8 years old. Boxing when I first started boxing.
You're always around, yeah.
They know my dad. My dad managed and trained a lot of professional fighters as well. Sure. So I mean, I grew up in a gym. I brought my dad back to boxing because he, you know, he always said I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you.
Come on.
Goes back to the gym. They all find out he's back in the gym. So now all these boxers come to get the, you know, the coaching from the old man.
You're here, you know.
Right. So he managed tons of boxers, professional and amateur.
But officially, so it's a payment. It's
you yeah, a license like anything else, right? You have to pay for the license, get a physical. Okay. Go through all that stuff to become a professional.
And is there like a board that has to approve you?
I guess.
Yeah.
That would be it, you know, okay. But I kind of.
Somebody just can't become a professional.
No, you just can't walk in there and say, I want to be a professional fighter.
I'm paying for my license. Here
no,
you go.
Right. You need to have, you know, the background. Yeah. And
so
the easy part for us, like, in the amateur boxing game is that they know you. They see you coming up, and they know that you're going to go pro. Also, you're going pro, and you're going to fight on a local promoter's card who is also licensed through the state of Illinois to throw that show, so they know who you are. When you go fight, let's say, in Jersey, for example, or Madison Square Garden in New York, the commission from here contacts the commission from there, and it says, hey, Vince is good to go. You know, he's legit. He's 13-0, whatever. You know, give the record and all that, and they kind of give the blessing off so that you can fight in New York because you're fighting in another commission.
Right.
So of course you got to go there and pay.
You got to be in good standing with your commission.
Correct.
To fight. So
kiss the ring.
What was your professional record?
My professional record was 13 wins and 2 losses.
Now, the 2 losses that you had, did they move on to greatness?
One was early on in my career, and then one was the last fight of my career.
Yeah.
And I just pulled up a poster the other day. It was 1997. I fought for the Illinois State title, for the middleweight title, and I lost to Anthony Ivory.
How come I know that name?
It was a close decision. They gave him a split decision, and there's other reasons for that, but... That's just
is
the way
he
boxing
local guy?
Is. He's a local guy. Nice guy. But, you know, my enemy at the time.
it was a good match?
Yeah, it was a good match. We fought, I think, 8 to 10 rounds. I think it was 8 for the title.
That's pro.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
I think it was an 8-round fight for the Illinois State middleweight title. And I was a number one contender, and it was vacant at the time. So he won the title, split decision, was surprised. That's one of those, when a decision comes and your opponent is surprised he won, you know what I mean? So we had a rematch scheduled, and I injured my right hand again, and I needed surgery. After that surgery.
That was the last fight?
That was my last fight. I never came back.
No kidding.
Actually, there was a fireman at Engine 26 because I was on the ambulance. Pat Fitz. He said, he goes, let me ask you something. If you ruin that hand so bad, how many times have you broken a hand is what he said. I go, well, this is the third time. This will be the third surgery on his hand. He says, if you ruin that hand so bad that you can't work on this job, what are you going to do for a living? Because you're not going to be able to box either. And it was like a light bulb, you know. But wait a minute.
It's hard to sign. Yeah, I got IVs with the left hand.
Yeah, I got pins in here. You know, they shaved my bone off my hip.
We see that thing.
So, oh, Jesus. I got 3 pins in there. They shaved my iliac crest on my right side. To try to fuse a bone.
Jeez.
Didn't take. Had to go back in, shaved off my left side.
Come on.
Do it again.
Just to even you out.
Right. Just even me out. And you know what? It was
up until then, he was walking around in a circle all the time.
Belts weren't fitting right. It was a real fucking problem.
I don't think it was going to, you know, it was going to stop.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus. Now, retrospect.
Yeah.
If I would have continued to keep boxing, I was just going to continue to have hand injuries.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was...
Who's your favorite fighter?
My favorite fighter?
Yeah.
I got to say Wilfredo Benitez. Yeah, and Wilfredo Gomez. So they both passed away. Or no, Wilfredo Benitez is still right down the street from the Regent Hospital. We usually sometimes we get him.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, come on. To come down. Shit. He's in a wheelchair. He's not doing real well, but he was the youngest world champion in the world, you know, in the world. So I think he was 16 years old, 17 years old. His father signed for
him. Wasn't he an Olympic boxer too?
You know, I'm not sure if his Olympic career, but his professional career, I remember watching him as a kid.
Yeah.
And of course, that's when we watched boxing on Channel 7, Worldwide Sports.
Yeah.
That
Another
was when.
Puerto Rican boxer, right?
Yeah, Puerto Rican boxer.
Boxing wasn't as diluted as it is right now. Right now, there are so many different belts.
Yeah.
And
it's
just so diluted. You had a world champion who was a world champion. Yeah. He actually fought everybody to get there.
Yeah.
But now with the different divisions, different. So
yeah, they call it Alphabet Soup or something like that when they started. Because you got the U.S., you got the WBC, the WBA, the IBF, and then now you got the WBO. Right. And then underneath that, sorry to interrupt you, they have intercontinental belts.
Yep.
And then they have smaller belts like the USBF, which is United States Boxing Federation, that's under the IBF.
Huh.
You know, that kind of thing.
Right. And that they keep watering it down. But back in the day, you had these big fights because these guys like fought their way to the top and the good guys fought the good guys.
Yeah, right.
You'll have guys in their weight division who are awesome, never fight the next best guy.
Right. Normally,
they'll never see each other.
Normally, yeah. The commissions or the commissions and the organization, like the WBC, they have to mandatory that fight. So Vince is a champion. Corey's a number one contender. If Vince thinks he's a little bit too tough or his management thinks he's a little bit too tough, they continue to keep trying to avoid Corey.
Yeah.
Until at one point the commission is going to step in, or not the commission, the organization will step in and says, you have to defend your belt against this guy. So you could take some preliminary fights before fighting Corey. And they're kind of handpicked at that point. And that's what I think that's what ruins
Well, didn't that
sport.
Happen? Who's the Mexican redhead? Canelo.
Yeah.
Didn't Canelo have something similar like that going on where, like, there were a lot of, I thought there were, who was it that was coming up around his side? Because he is just a fucking badass, tough motherfucker. And, like,
so they could defend just somebody in the ranking. So, like, he can fight against somebody who's ranked number 10. And not defend against number one, but he's picking somebody from there, which is he feels they handpick and they're like, we can beat this guy. Until the commission says, you have to fight Corey. Yeah.
There's also a thing where if you don't defend your title.
Well, they'll strip it.
They'll strip it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's another thing that. You got to get that because we'll take a break.
No,
we're right in an hour. You
want
to take a break?
Yeah, we can if you want.
You got this or anything?
No.
Okay, we'll take a break here.
I got somebody,
and
for the panel
we'll be right back because we got more boxing talk. Because I want to talk to you about UFC and stuff like that. So,
all right.
The opinions and views are that of Chicago's Bravest Stories and their guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views of any municipal governments, fire protection districts, fire departments, EMS, or law enforcement organizations.